is such a tragic avera on so many levels because of the destruction that that can often occur in Adam Chavero, and globally, cosmically, Lashon Hara is a powerful and destructive force. Destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, Tenaschinim, obviously closely related. The Chavetz Chaim Shmiras Lashon talks about the connection between Lashon Hara and Tenaschinim, and historically, what that did to our people, going back all the way to Tzitzis Mitzrayim. And I think because of how serious the affair is, we all know, we've been raised since we're little kids, how much we have to be working on it, we should try to get to one of the roots of that as well. And I think there's something which can also serve as a pre-Bein HaZmanim message at the same time. So now, in my humble opinion, I think it's always redeeming and inspiring if you reflect on the words of Chazal. Chazal saying, Yivamas Ayin Tesamon Aleph, that Klal Yisrael have three core midos. Rachmanim, Baishanim, V'gomlin Chasadim. Ever hear that Gemara before? Rachmanim, they're merciful. They look out for the needs of others. Baishanim, they also have a certain shame. There are certain things that a Jew, it's much less likely for a Jew to lower himself, to have such lack of self-respect, to behave in a way that other people in the world may feel comfortable, may not feel inhibitions, publicly, privately. Where Baishanim, we have a certain innate feeling of our self-worth that we won't lose that nobility. The world we live in, which has zero busha, sometimes brings that down. It makes it a challenge for us. And the third one is gomel chasadim, that Klal Yisrael is markedly known for their above and beyond benevolence. Right? We spoke about the other day about the great philanthropic numbers that American Jewry demonstrate. Unfortunately, we need to redirect and sometimes redistribute some of those good intentions to go to worthy causes, Torah causes as well. But Baruch Hashem, Jews are very giving. They're gomel chasadim. So when you know that these are inherent in our spiritual DNA and those set us apart, you know, we can hope to access and grow towards perfecting those midos in every generation. I had a friend who, in a similar vein, told me one summer that he loves Parshas Balak. Parshas Balak is kind of a funny parsha to be your favorite, okay?
My favorite parsha.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rebbe always, like in summary, always told it so well, so I just remembered it.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. The power of a Rebbe. Okay. So, interestingly enough, his love of the parsha wasn't the story. It's a great story, but in the Nevuos of Bilam, about Klal Yisrael, right, after he's done, after he's tried to curse them multiple times, he gives up pretty much. Balak gives up. And Bilam begins his nevuos about the all the nations, but in particular Klal Yisrael. And he talks about what's going to happen to them in the future. But he also highlights in that conversation, as it were, many of the particular traits, the characteristics that define our destiny. Lohedir Avin B'Yakov, the way that Hashem overlooks our shortcomings and wants to raise us up and give us chances for tshuva and to grow and to progress. Heim am levadav yishkon. Bilam describes us as that unique, nation that sometimes is apart and has to define itself in contradistinction to the rest of the world. Those nevuos give us our destiny. And Hashem gave Bilam the words. Or maybe not the exact words, but he gave the concepts and the prophecy to describe us, but that's also, gives us direction, right? It's sort of like, there's two types of guys I meet when they come to yeshiva. I sit down with them, have lunch with them for the first time, and, I find out what their major is. So sometimes guys have a very driven, purposeful schedule, that they've registered for already from day one. And it could be pre-med, it could be something in finance. Very often I find that those guys already decided their trajectory, 3 years ago sometime. And then I have the guys who, it's their third, fourth semester, and they don't know what their major is. They're still trying, they keep going back and forth to the career center trying to write a resume. I'm not putting anyone down. It's hard to have the vision to figure out what your life is going to be like, but at least Klal Yisrael has a vision. Klal Yisrael has been told already where we're heading, what we're supposed to be striving for. So those are that's the beauty of again, the Nevuos of Bilam, or the character traits that the Gemara Nevamos describes. But, on the other hand, I had to admit, I got a little choked up last year in the Beis Medrash when we were laning Parshas Kisisa. Because in Kisisa, forget Bilam, forget Chazal and the Gemara Nivamos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, three times in one parsha, refers to us as Am Kishay Orif. Am Kishay Orif. Forget it. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomel Chasadim. Hashem describes us as stiff-necked people. Hashem himself describes us three times as stiff-necked people. Right? And what's worse, our best defense attorney, after the Chet Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu, uses the same description.
Is this the only parsha that it refers to us as? Is this?
No, but yeah, okay, so it's not very encouraging. It's not very encouraging, right? We obviously there's many good things that Hashem tells us about who we are, and B'ni B'chori Yisrael. He tells Moshe, has to tell Paro, they're my firstborn son. Okay, but when you hear this, what does it mean? So we're stubborn, we're stuck. This is the way we've been labeled. Right now, you're not allowed to label kids, you know, like, because they'll stick with that label forever, even as a parent, right? You never tell a kid you're a bad boy. You tell them you're a good boy, but you did something wrong, right? You want the kid to feel like, no, I'm a good boy, and this doesn't match with my standard, you know, way that I should be behaving, so I'll get rid of that behavior, because I'm bad, so I'm a good boy. But the kid hears his whole life, he, you know, in school, he's like, oh, you're bad. Then he, oh, taka, you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we don't want this to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you look at how Rashi explains Am Kishay Orif, so you know, usually people translate Am Kishay Orif. How do we translate that? Stiff-necked people? Or what does that mean? How do we usually translate that? Like stubborn. We're stubborn, right? Rashi says, Mechazrin Kishay Orpam. They turn around their neck. They turn their back. Lenegid Mochichem. To those who give them rebuke. To those who criticize them. Umemanim Lishmoa. And they refuse to listen. You turn your back on those who criticize you and you refuse to listen. So that's it. We don't take criticism well. That's a pshat. We like to learn Musar. We don't necessarily like to hear Musar when it's directed to us. Okay? I think B'nai Yeshiva have achieved a striving in that regard, but it's not so simple. This is how we're being described. And it would seem that the threat is really acknowledged in the midst of giving Musar in the first place, right? What's a pasuk? What's a pasuk for giving Musar? Hocheach, tochiach zamisecha. You should certainly give rebuke to your friend. And how does the pasuk end? V'lo sisa olav chet. And don't bear sin. What's the shaychas at the beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk? Some of us say that you have to watch out for a backlash. You could give musar, but you could also be doing a very big sin by giving musar, because if it just, the person's ignoring it, right, and maybe even generates more chet, so then you haven't accomplished anything, and you might as well be quiet.
It's not your fault.
What's that?
It's not your fault at that point. If they're doing bad things, you're just at least trying to help them out. Like, yo, you're doing this wrong.
Correct.
So why is that? Why is that?
The Gemara says that you have to make an assessment. If you know in advance that what you're doing is going to drive the person further, then in many situations it's actually better to be quiet. Especially if the guy knows what he's doing wrong, right?
Yeah,
if you know he's not going to be receptive. So okay, so that's a different story. This is a Sifrei Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Yom Kippurim. We can talk about this separately. It's a case-by-case basis. And it's driven also by what the Gemara tells us. Even so, Adam, whatever, when the Torah has in mind to give rebuke, the Gemara says that we don't know how to give rebuke nowadays. One of the reasons why it's not always effective is because we don't know how to do it. There's you know, the methods we sometimes think are effective are sometimes counterproductive. And when we're more expert in giving it over, then maybe the mitzvah is more practical, and it's not necessarily the case. So there's something to think about over here, Bosai. Let's focus not only the musar of keeping Torah mitzvahs properly, but there's a musar of musar. There's a musar of how to accept musar. There's a musar of how to let musar penetrate us. And the Am Kishay Orif is Akrash and Kisisa, we're not always so good at taking it in. And that itself deserves focus for the time being, and then you'll see how it connects back to the parsha. Let's think a little more about what Rashi says. Memanim l'shmoa, we reject, we refuse to listen. There's a diak over here, Bosai. In truth, our weakness is not necessarily accepting the musar really, but it's that we aren't even hearing it in the first place. Right? If someone gives musar, we're not rude and attentive, and we're not simply ignoring them in an inappropriate fashion, but we're not always acknowledging that musar applies to us. You know, we have an ego, and it isn't always easy to admit our weaknesses. But at the same time, if you think about it, as difficult as it is for us to recognize our own shortcomings, we are very, very good at noticing other people's shortcomings. As much trouble as we have accepting Mussar, it could be part of that is because we're so good at directing the Mussar to someone else. It's always easier to assume the blame is on a different person rather than owning it and taking responsibility for yourself.
I think that's psychologically proven also that people who tend to judge people don't like another, get very, it bothers them a lot. They believe a lot of people are judging them.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Please, if you can show me that, I'd love to see it. Okay? And I think maybe Chazal had a certain sense of that too, as we'll see. So again, these are not necessarily two different factors. We boost our ego and assume we've surpassed others, and the more fault we see in someone else, the better we feel about our own standing. So it's sort of like a vicious cycle, right? Some say that that's a pshat al chet shechatanu lefanecha beflilus. Beflilus means judgment, judging other people. The more we're judging other people, we're raising ourselves up because it's like this power balance, and the further you push this guy down, the further you go up, and the less receptive you'll be for someone who's directing that mussar in your direction. And what comes out, Rabosa, is that we're directing criticism, we're having a critical mentality, and we become, as a result of that mentality, more likely to deflect the mussar from ourselves, which again is a vicious cycle. A vicious cycle. Am Kishay Orf is defining us as being very frum in the mindset of Hocheya Tochich Samisecha, and that's precisely what generates Am Kishay Orf, ignoring the mussar that we should be hearing. There is a popular melitza, which brings us back to the parsha. It appears in Maseches Negoyim, the Masechta that talks about the Nega Tzaras. Maseches Negoyim, it says, there's Halacha. We know that only Kohen can be the judge on Tzaras, even if you are convinced. Even if Rav Moshe Feinstein looks at your hand and he says, oh, that's Tzaras. You do not have Tzaras. By the way, some people have reported Talmidim of Ramosha, he actually saw someone say that to a person. Someone came with something on his skin that resembled what the Torah describes as Tzaras, and Ramosha finds and said, yes, it's Tzaras.
Is that
facts
or no?
But, Torah says only a Kohen is given the authorization to issue a Psak. Uh-huh. So even if the God of the Torah says, yes, that fits all the descriptions, and maybe the guy has to do tshuva, and maybe that's what Ramosha was telling him, that perhaps because Baruch Hu sent me a message. But practically speaking, it was not Tzaras. Okay? Halachically, the guy's not tummy like a Metzorah. But, listen to this. It also says in the Mishnah over there, in Negoyim, Kol HaNegoyim Adam Roe Chutz Minigi Atzmo. Even though Kohen is authorized to issue a psak about Negoyim, he can see and judge every case of Negoyim that's out there except Negoyim on his own skin. That's halacha. Same way you can't be a dying judge on your own court case, you need to find somebody else to paskin on your skin.
So Ross, like a Kohen, has the ability to tell what it is. So
he needs to find another Kohen. He needs to find another Kohen.
Is there like a spiritual like aura to it or something that makes it?
That's a big debate. But he is disqualified from paskin on himself in the same way he can't paskin on a court case between him and somebody else. Kol HaNegoyim Adam Roeh Chutz Minigi Atzmo. Rabosai, listen to the words of Balim Lusser Dashen from there. Any shortcoming that you have, any nega. Nega doesn't only mean the application of the realm of Tzaras. It means any failing, any personal mida that is imperfect, any character trait that needs to be fixed inside of yourself. Self-awareness doesn't come easily when it comes to things that we need to fix. Zuck the Mishnah. You don't see those negoyim. Kol negoyim adam roeh, chutz minigi atzmo. The pashut pshat, the halachic pshat is, he's not allowed to judge them. I mean, you can't see it. You don't notice your own shortcomings. Zok de kliyakar, a pasuk in this week's parsha, unbelievable. You know what happens after we shot them up and we pass them? They had sarah, zok de Torah, atzeruah, shabon nega, begodav, yufrumim, roshia faruah. Valsofam yate, the halach is a tzeruah who is subject to tzeras. He tears his clothing, he has to grow out his hair, he has to put his hood over his head. Tommy, Tommy, he calls out to other people, I'm Tommy, don't come too close. Zuck the Kliyaka noticed the very careful wording of the Pasuk. Hatzarua asher bo hanega. Translate Rabosa, Hatzarua, the one who has saras, asher bo hanega, that has the nega on him. Zuck the Kliyaka, deeper name, you know what it means? The Gemara in Kedushin says, Chazal of a Kabbalah called posel b'mumo posel. Anyone who accuses somebody else of some failing, of some disqualification, he is guilty of the same problem. That's why the pasuk says, the Kli Yakar tells us, Hatzarua asher bo hanega. How do you get the tzaras? How do you get the tzaras? By speaking Lashon Hara, by calling out a negative trait of someone else. Hatzarua asher bo hanega. The one who's suffering tzaras, he himself is guilty of the same nega, the same failing and shortcoming that he went and slandered someone else about. Like it jumps off the page. It's a new level of pshat. Maybe it's drush, but zuck the Kli Yakar not so far from drush. Lakach nemar asher bo anega, because he is probably guilty of the very same nega about which he's calling out his friend. The one who spoke lashon hara in the first place is he feels so compelled to spread that information, in all likelihood, he is guilty of it the same way. And precisely in that same area, he's lacking. Kol posel b'mumo posel. Rabbi Chaim Velazhner says, that's a pshat in the words of Shlomo HaMelech, in Mishlei Kamayim Panim El Panim Kein Leva Adam. A man's heart is like water. Water reflects. You look into the puddle, you see your face. A man's heart has the same reflective properties. Imagine you're looking at someone through glass. If the glass is clean and clear, on the other side, everything's in focus and in HD. But if the glass is dirty, smudged, or it's fogged, whatever's on the other side will appear with the same imperfections. Isn't that beautiful? So whatever you're seeing through cloudy lenses, through that reflection, if it's clouded, it's your own blur that you place on the image. So if you see failings in someone else, it's because your own glasses are smudged and you see everything through those same glasses. Unbelievable. War of Independence in 1948 took a brutal toll on the lives of those living in Yerushalayim. Terrible carnage, casualties, tragic proportions, thousands of Jews were killed, and not to mention, we lost our access and our connection for years until the Six-Day War. To the old city. Imagine going to Eretz Yisrael and no, stop here. Can't go to the old city. Just imagine your life experiences in Eretz Yisrael where you could not get, you couldn't enter Shar Yafo, right? Your whole connection to Eretz Yisrael would be different. Your whole connection to the Ribono Shel Olam would be different. Just imagine that, right? For years, from 1948 until 1967, the best you could do, it's unbelievable, Rabbi Miller, who was there during the Six-Day War, he was there. Remind me, Rabbi Osser, maybe Yom HaTzmaut, we should play this recording. It's Yom Yerushalayim. Yom Yerushalayim is usually after the Zman. He went to Eretz Yisrael for his bar mitzvah trip. He came back later as a yeshiva bachur. Rabbi Willig was there also. Mordechai Willig was, I think, Shana Aleph then. Baruch Hu should all give us the strength. Not that we should experience the same things, but we should have the same sense of Mesiras Nefesh that Rabbi Willig's parents must have had to send him to be in Eretz Yisrael during the Six-Day War. When every Arab nation literally was ready to push the Jews into the sea. Can you imagine that Mesiras Nefesh? I hate to sidetrack, but I told you this story once. I was walking by the Kotel, and they had one of those ceremonies to swear in the soldiers. And the commander said, as part of the oath that they take, are you prepared to give up your life for the land, for your nation? And they yelled back in unison, yes, I swear, nishba, nishba, nishba. Is there anything that anyone in this room is ready to swear you'd give your life for? We don't live in a world of mysterious nefesh like that. Everything's easy. Everything's like... So imagine Eretz Yisrael, as Rabbi Miller described, where the closest you could get was like to climb up on top of a building on Hartzion, and they right behind that, that's where the Kotel is. That's the best you could do. 1948, Rabbi Hussein. Terrible destruction. So there were certain individuals came to the Brisker Rav, who lived in Eretz Yisrael at the time, and they said to him, he said, look, Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately at that time, just like it is today, was filled with secular people who had no interest in being religious, no anti-religious. They were trying to undermine whatever remnants of Torah and Yiddishkeit existed in the state. And he said, look at all these Machal Shabbos, all these terrible Ovri Avera. Look what they've caused. Look at the Midas Hadin that they've caused that's brought about so much destruction in Eretz Yisrael and the Holy Land. And the Biskrov said, I understand, you're so busy talking about everyone else's Averas. What about your Averas? Always, you know, so quick to point the blame and say, whatever we're suffering is because of them, because of the people who aren't from. Right, and you're a Tzadik Gomer? Remember the story of Yonah. Yonah is sleeping on the boat, and the boat is about to capsize. And they find him. They say, get up and daven. And what does he say? Right? What could he have said? Biskrov said, he could have said, look, you know, I'm on a boat full of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. I'm the only Jew here, and he was a tzaddik and a navi. He was a navi. He was a Talmud of Elisha. Right? Okay, we're talking about a navi. And he said, no, Bishvili Hasar Agalazah. He says, I know I'm completely responsible. This storm is all about me. Put me in the water, you'll be safe. He could have put the blame on everybody else, pointed fingers. No. He said, if I have what to be responsible for, it's me. Bring to mind an old saying from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. We're generally very worried about my Gashmius and his Ruchnius. And in reality, we should be in the habit of worrying about his Gashmius and my Ruchnius. Yechap? My Gashmius and his Ruchnius, that's usually what we worry about. And instead, I should be worrying about his Gashmius and worry about my Ruchnius. Apparently, the correct approach is what Yonah Navi said. To look inside yourself, not to point the blame, not to look at somebody else. I'll tell you a great story. And also, in that same time period in Yerushalayim, afterwards, Jonathan, there was an individual. The community was, there was some major Shalom Bayis problems, and the husband needed to get back on track to where he was supposed to be as far as being a husband and a father. But they knew if they gave him the Musa straight up, the leaders of the community, if they gave him the Musa straight up at him, it would not be heard. It would fall on deaf ears. So they were talking about different strategies, what we can do to get the message across. His wife was suffering. So the idea they came up with is, next Shabbos in Shul, they'll give a drusha, and we'll talk about Shalom Bayis, very pointed, without mentioning him by name, but he's going to be there in Shul, and we'll get the point across like that, and he'll hear it without feeling that it was directed to him. So who do they choose? The Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, Rav Ari Levine. He was going to give the drusha. He gave up. He got up and he gave this unbelievable shmooze. Everyone knew what it was about. But at the end of the drusha, after Shul, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, the Rosh Hashiva Beit Chaim, runs over to Rav Ari Levine and said, oh, thank you so much, Rav Ari, for giving me. I'm such a bad husband. I really need to improve. And he gave examples. Oh, wasn't respectful to my wife over here, and she did this, and I didn't react properly. Give a whole list of things he had to improve. Thank you so much for that shmooze. He said, Rosh Hashiva, you should be giving the shmooze. I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to somebody else. Mr. Zalman didn't look at it like that. He didn't look at it like that. He was looking at himself. In the very first Musar Shmuz that Hashem gave, what was the very first Musar Shmuz? He speaks to Adam Arishon. He made a mistake. And he says, Ayeka, where are you? What does that mean, where are you? Hashem knew where he was. He couldn't hide. There weren't too many people, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could find them. Weren't too many places to go. Weren't too many places to run. What does it mean, Ayeka? He was saying, Adam, where are you? Don't shift the blame to someone else other than yourself. What did Adam Arishon do, Rabosai? What was Adam Arishon's immediate response? She did it. It was her fault. Hashem says, Ayeka, where are you? What about your responsibility? What about your fault? Maybe, as Chazal tells us, it was your fault that she made you do it, right? You gave her instructions that were more strict than I originally gave, and that gave the Nachash a chance to convince her, oh, maybe the whole thing's a joke, right? It's your fault. Kadosh Baruch Hu prepared him. You're right, didn't let him in the spur of the moment respond impulsively. Rashi says, he didn't strike him with the lightning right off the bat. He started talking to him. Ayeka, where are you? Let's talk, let's schmooze. To give him a chance to respond the right way. But no, he made a mistake. He didn't say, where am I? He says, where is she? And that was a critical error. So let's talk L'maisa Rabosa. Let's bring this down. Halach L'maisa. What we can take from this? How do we turn around the Am Kishei Oref, right? We said Am Kishei Oref is turning our backs so we're not listening to the Musar. So it's not just when you hear a Musar Shmuz, and I heard this once. I remember when I was in NCSY Kollel, Rabbi Benowitz got up, and before he even said anything, he said, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're going to be thinking. Everything I'm about to say, your brain is going to be processing it as, oh yeah, he's talking to the guy next to me. Don't do that. I'm talking to you. So sometimes we have to introduce our listening to a Musar Shmuz, just like the one who's speaking needs to introduce the Musar Shmuz that he's about to give. But more than that, Hashem also gives Musar. Hashem also gives Musar, not in conversation for the simple people like he does to other Marishon or to other people in history. He certainly gives messages all the time. We know that there's Hashgacha Pratis to give us the messages to help us try to find what we need and how do we have to improve. But, you know, that's when we talk about being close to Hashem. Being close to Hashem starts with realizing that he's communicating with us in concrete ways that we need to decipher. But you know which Musar Shmuz is the easiest to ignore? It's the unsolicited advice or criticism that we never asked for that doesn't come from Hashem, but Hashem might be directing it towards us from people we aren't interested in listening to. Behind closed doors, we know the people who know us best, the people who can probably see beneath the surface of that cloudy glass that obscures our own negun that we described before, even from our own perceptions, call a negun adam ruach chutz minigei atzmo. Someone else is going to notice what I'm lacking. In the same way that we said, Taraz comes to the person who was very quick to notice what he was lacking before he noticed his own chisronos. And that is where we win. Shema b'ni Musar avicha, al titosh toros imecha. Your father and your mother, you got to listen to them. That's a mashal. For people who know you best, it might be your siblings, but the message of an Am Kishei Oref, like Rashi said, we're not listening to our mochichim, is that please get ready. The vast majority of us are about to spend a lot of time with family. A lot more time than we're used to spending with family, and a lot more than we spend the entire rest of the year. I know there's some people working on Pesach programs. Okay, you got off easy. Okay? Yontif with family is very special. Okay? But you're spending a lot of time with people who you don't always want to spend time with at this stage in life. I guarantee you, Rabbi Sayyid, Mr. Hashem, you'll get to the older stage in life where, as I told you before, I'm jealous of you. I wish I spent as much time with my parents as you do, because it's an unbelievable opportunity to engage and keep it out of aim and show your children how to behave towards your parents and your in-laws. Let them learn a lesson from your own example. But at the very least, when you come home, we all know there's a lot of baggage and there's a lot of old tensions that surface that you don't have to deal with when you're away for days or weeks or months at a time here in yeshiva. So for the Am Kishei Oref, you're going to dive right back into the same old machlokas and picking on this and picking on that. But a Ben Aliyah wants to spend yontif, not just peacefully, but productively in a Musar way. Shomen cherpasim ve'inim mashivin. As the Gemara tells us, to be receptive to even those who call you out on things, and don't respond. Don't respond. Bolein piv b'shas mariva, like we quoted earlier from the Mesillas Yesharim, the Gemara in Chulin. Be quiet. Be quiet. If someone's critical of me, take it. Don't answer back. Take the shot and do the cheshbon nefesh and answer yourself, do I deserve it? Because you probably do to some extent. And likewise, the criticism that you're ready to dish out to someone else, stop and for 1 week hold it back, not just for the sake of shalom. That's a great value, but also remember, kol apostle, b'mu apostle, you're probably guilty. I've done this so many times, and I'm telling you it's true. Whenever I feel the need to criticize someone, and I stop and I say, wait a minute, am I guilty of that? Within the next 24 hours, it's almost inevitable that I do the same thing to somebody else, and I realize, oh my gosh, I do that. The odds are, kemayim panim apanim, you, like we said before, are guilty of the very same thing. Very same thing. Bosai, it's true now with your parents, your siblings, it'll be true, Mr. Hashem, with your wife. Be mindful of A, being quiet and taking it and saying, yes, I'm going to work on it, and also being quiet when you're ready to give it to someone else and say, wait a minute, I'm probably guilty of it myself. And then I'm telling you, if you can do that at least once over the course of Yontif, you will come out feeling so much better about how productive and how enjoyable you'll, by being quiet and accepting the Musar, you'll actually have a more enjoyable Yontif than if you aggressively conflict and clash with every piece of criticism that comes your way. That will ruin your Yontif, but growing from the Yontif will actually make you feel so much more so much better about what you were able to come out of. Trust me. Mishol bizocha to be roa nege atzmo, right? Contrary to that line in Nagam, to realize our own shortcomings, to use that as a chance to prevent us from speaking lashon hara, tzeru asher bo anaga, and also to propel us to self-improvement and looking at others in a much more positive light in every interaction. The message of Parshas Tezriah, Rabbosai.